Good morning. Last week and this week are the same readings, just different parts of that same verse of Jesus talking to us about everything really being of the Spirit, and the Bhagavad Gita emphasizing that everything that we think of as our individual self, or that we look at other people and we see their great accomplishments, that's how the Gita puts it. Know that everyone who accomplishes anything is really just acting with a spark of my divinity. One of the great challenges that we all face in life is this inclination to compare ourselves with people around us. Either we compare ourselves and decide that we are superior, or we compare ourselves and decide that we're inferior, or we compare ourselves with envy. You know, I was born with such heavy bones and that one is so delicate. Or they got the promotion that I should have had. Someone was telling me a couple of days ago that when the human mind is at rest, it's only a matter of a few seconds before it goes to its relationship with the world around it and with the people around it. That a tremendous amount of our energy is always engaged in this sort of external picture of who's doing what to whom and how do they relate to me. I remember myself, just even when I would think about other people as a young person, I would always think about them in relation to me. You know, it wasn't really that I would actually think about them, I would just think about them in relation to me. But still, we're always playing out this game. Now, in the Gita today, it just gives us a wholly other way of thinking about this. Know that everything that has glory, no matter how you define that, that everyone does, may do, is just to the extent that they have opened themselves to some of that cosmic energy. Because there is only one force, there's only one reality. This is scientific fact. If we are expressing it, it's not because we ourselves have created it. We tend to feel ourselves to be the source of who we are because we're so self-concerned we don't actually notice. It's happening inside of us. Here it is. I remember as a little child, children are so just naturally, utterly self-centered that they demonstrate with complete innocence the delusions that we all have. When I was 7 and my mother sent me to sleepaway camp, my parents sent me to sleepaway camp. I was very young to be there, but that wasn't a problem for me. But I was too small for some of the crafts, which was involved making these potholders out of stretchy things, and I just couldn't do it. So when parent visiting day came, and every child had these potholders hung on these nails on their bunk, I didn't have any. So I took a couple from the bunk above me and hung them on mine. Which did not go down well with the girl from whom I took them. She did not have a generous spirit. So there was a kerfuffle about this. There are many aspects to this story that are touching, but the part that I'm thinking of now was I just defiantly said, I didn't take them, they fell. And usually my parents insisted on truthfulness strongly, but in this case, God bless them, they understood there were other forces at work. But I still remember just standing there. They fell, as if anybody would believe me. Even I at the time was trying to work out the physics of it, how it could come off the nail and then on the nail. But, you know, I was determined in that moment, against all evidence, against all common sense, I still had my point of view and I was just going to insist. Are we so different? Really? You know, we get obsessed with these ideas in our head. We think, well, you know, look what I've accomplished or look what I haven't accomplished, all of these ideas. And the answer to it is not what we imagine it to be. And this is where psychology and spirituality are really very, very different. That doesn't mean there isn't a place for psychological development and psychological health. In fact, being on the spiritual path, the premise of being able to be on the spiritual path is that we have a fairly well-functioning ego. I mean, if we're too fractured in our psychological or egoic structure, you really have to attend to that before you can come to the spiritual path, for this simple reason, which is often, if you're too fractured psychologically, you're hoping that just to surrender the whole mess to God and never really have to face into it. It's not that the divine is not capable of repairing anything. It's that if our motivation is trying to avoid having to face what has to be faced, that's what makes it the fatal flaw. But assuming relatively well-functioning ego structure, it isn't a matter of just getting it more and more in line. We just keep thinking, I just have to get it more and more in line. Swami Kriyananda talks about that when he first was awakening in his late teens and early 20s before he met Master. He was only 22 when he met Master, but he was a precocious person, so he was very intent on this. And he suddenly saw the need for self-development. But he saw that no matter how hard he worked on this quality, then this quality was having a problem. When he worked up on this one, then this one was being ignored. And no matter how much he tried to just perfect it in human terms, in his own way, something was always wiggling loose. But on the spiritual path, what we're beginning to understand, and this is what we're talking about today, self with the capital S, reliance versus self-reliance with the small s, is the only thing that will ever put us in harmony is when we put ourselves in harmony with what is really happening, with the reality of what this world is like. There I am, 7 years old, trying to persuade my parents of an impossibility, that I didn't take those, they fell. My mother comforted me. I can still remember her comforting me, but she didn't believe me, right? So we ourselves, we imagine, I can do this on my own. I can make up my own ideas. You know, I don't need a guru. I don't believe in reincarnation. I don't think karma is true. You know, it's just luck and I'm going to make my own luck, or whatever you're going to say. We can just make all the theories we want. And God is amused. And he just listens to us and will even comfort us. That's the very touching part of this. We can make our own mess. We can be completely the cause of what happens to us, and still the divine will comfort us. Mother is amused. She doesn't believe us, but she still will comfort us because she loves us. So Divine Mother watches us. Just like, how is that working for you, dear? Just declaring that you can do it on your own. I don't need a master. I don't need a teaching. I don't have to commit to any one path. I can just do anything I want and call it spiritual. A very, very popular teacher for many years. That was the essence of his teaching. Just do anything you want and then just call it spiritual. So I'm a spiritual person as I drink and carouse and am promiscuous and spend all my time in low consciousness places, but God is everywhere, right? Well, how is that working for you? So Jesus talks in a just a completely different, really powerful way. I am the vine. And I was very touched by that line. He says, I am the vine. And of course, he's speaking in two ways there. You know, we often talk about I, when Jesus used the pronoun I, he meant the Christ consciousness. And he was telling us, therefore, the consciousness that he has achieved, when that is the only reality that there is. We all live in that, and we all must come to that. But he was also talking as a guru. He was also talking as the personal messenger of that infinite, as the window through which we can access the infinite. And both realities are true. And for our own emotional and spiritual well-being, we really should deeply accept both realities, whether Jesus is your window onto the infinite, whether one of the other masters or a master who's not represented in this room is your chosen window. But God does come in these windows. In fact, there's a sentence in this reading. If Swami were still living, I would write to him and ask him to clarify it, or perhaps even edit it. He says, Jesus' presence among his disciples told them that God was listening to them. Because a prayer of love went up from earth, I'm quoting from the Festival of Light, a prayer of love went up from earth and you responded, God responded. A ray of your light flashed out from the infinite, burst downward through night skies of consciousness, and was born on earth for the redemption of mankind in human form. You'll hear that if you haven't heard it before when we do our Festival of Light at the end. A prayer of love went up from earth and you responded. An avatar doesn't come sort of randomly. Avatars are not imposed on people. Avatars respond. There has to be a sufficient longing for a new understanding, for a deeper understanding, for a more intimate relationship. And the reason we say in the festival every single week is so we will realize that we were part of that prayer of love. That, you know, the human heart in wordless yearning, which is also part of that festival. This is why we have that repeating ritual, you know, in wordless yearning. That's how it's expressed. Because we sense something. Even when everything is just going beautifully. You know, our families are fine, our health is fine, our money is fine, our relationships are fine. Or maybe all of that is a mess. Whichever way it is, there's still this, it's never quite enough. That's just the way it is. Because we were not, the potholders cannot fall off the nails and hook on other nails. It just can't happen. And no matter how much the child mind insists that that's what happened, it can't happen. And the little self, trying to rely on itself, declares, I will be satisfied. I do not need God or Guru. Or maybe I need God, but not Guru. Maybe I need the light, but not the personification. Maybe I need this, but not this. And it's just, well, how's that working for you? And we just have to come to that point of humble honesty. Well, we can just tell, you know, it's not that I'm not doing fine, but this is not enough. And if people think it's enough, there's nothing you can do to tell them. Yogananda, we started a new class series on Tuesdays now, Conversations with Yogananda. It's the book. It's not, we're not having conversations, it's the book. Notes that Swami took. There are 481 of them, and we did two in the first class, so this could be a long series. We spent half the class on the preface, but still. Because we got hung up on individual words. Master talks about, he was asked, what's the difference? He was asked by a Columbia professor. Swamiji says, it's important to know who Master was speaking to. And he was asked, what's the difference between you as the guru, or you, and your disciples? And the obvious thing to think is, well, Master is huge, and we're teeny. I mean, that's the way it is. That all the medieval churches, one of the reasons they were made so enormous is so we would understand our proper relationship to God, which is that he's real big and we're real small. But Master instead said, you know, all of creation is made from the same substance, which is the ocean of spirit. And some waves are very high on the ocean, and some waves barely bulge on the ocean. Well, immediately, you paste Yogananda on the big wave, and the rest of us on the little wave. I mean, that's just how we think. That's how the human mind works. But Master reversed it. He said, the Master is barely a bulge on the ocean. Because the Master has no need to assert his separate identity. He lives in the whole ocean of spirit. And the more egoic and limited we are in our consciousness, the more we push our single wave up. I mean, if we were watching the waves, we would think it folly, wouldn't we? It would be like little children asserting a reality that just can't be so. That I'm going to get my wave and I'm going to get it really high, and then that will make me what? Separate from the ocean? Different than the ocean? Having power that doesn't come from the ocean? And that this wave, now that I've got it up here, is going to stay up here. And why is it going to stay up here? Because I want it to. Now that's a convincing argument, isn't it? Right. But the master has no need to separate himself from the greater reality. He just moves effortlessly, easily, harmoniously within it. And then Master had this wonderful phrase, which I just love. He says, the bigger the wave, the more exuberantly it engages in the delusion of this world. I love that word, exuberant. That about sums it up, isn't it? And he says, the closer the wave is to the ocean, the less excited it gets. It doesn't mean that it doesn't participate. You see, what I loved about this is that both participate. But one is exuberant about the temporary, and the other doesn't really get excited about it. Just moves along in that reality. I am the vine, Jesus said. God, my Father. Somehow that touched me. That's what I was starting with. So sweet. My Father is the husbandman. Now the husbandman comes with a big tool. We planted a little fig tree. We took down the fence in the backyard of Chela Bhavan and planted some trees there, and we planted a fig tree. In front of Chela Bhavan is a fig tree that is as big as a one-story building. On the side there is a fig tree that it is as big as much less. A small child, me when I was 7. That's about how big it is. And then we planted this ginger plant next to it. The ginger plant is participating exuberantly in being a ginger plant. And you're just encroaching on the fig tree. Fond as I am of the ginger plant, we really have to protect the fig tree. So I went out there with this tool, and I just started whacking away at the ginger tree, just having to, you know, good work, lad, in growing all these things, but we just can't have them. It's a brutal thing to do. I mean, I'm not a gardener, and I know that the ginger plant was alive, and it was just doing its thing, and it was doing it extremely well. It just was in the way of the fig tree, and it was a bit painful to just have to thwart it like that. But it had to be done. It just simply had to be done. That's the husbandman. You know, God has a very sharp tool in his hand. It's even worse than that. God has a tool that is like based on your DNA. You know, they're trying to do medicine now based on your DNA instead of the scattershot. He knows exactly what your pattern is. And Hanel, who was this elderly man, he was my age. I was very young. He was elderly at Ananda Village in the early years, and he knew all about gardening. And he trained our first organic gardeners. And he trained them when they were pruning a tree. He was in the Rudolf Steiner biodynamic method, which at the time was the first revolution. And he would say, you stand in front of the tree and you tune into it deeply enough that you see its astral form. And the astral form is the divine blueprint that on the material plane is trying to be manifested. So even if it's just a small tree, you tune into it enough that you can feel the astral body of this tree, and then you prune it to match that. You know, and if it's a small thing and it's growing toward it, then you prune it to match that. I mean, that's really respecting the life force, respecting the divine. I mean, there's so many, of course. You yourself have to have the capacity to be able to feel behind the obvious. Well, everything in this world is a symbol of the divine world. Jesus said, I am the vine, ye abide in me. You are but branches of my reality, as my disciples or speaking as Christ consciousness. Either way, You're just branches. And the branch does not exist on its own. The branch can only exist in relation to its source. And my father is the husbandman, and his tool is sharp. And he looks at us lovingly, just as my mother looked at me when I was lying to her, and you know, she could read my heart. But she knew where I was trying to go. In that moment, she comforted me to take me there. I do not remember them scolding me for lying, but they must have at some point. I know them too well. They would have. Because they were looking at my astral form, not consciously, but they were very conscientious. They knew who I was trying to be, and they knew who I intended to be, and they knew who they were who their responsibility to make me. And so every time I moved outside of that, they took a tool to it. Do you think that Divine Mother and my father, the husbandman, is going to be any less conscientious with us? You know, every time we begin to diverge from that divine pattern, then we will be pruned. And whether or not we suffer is really up to us. We will be changed. We will be forced to grow. We will be hurt. We will be deeply disappointed because we have such confusion. Why is a question I'm not even going to try to answer. But let's just be practical. We do. But every time our natural inclinations, as we were saying in our affirmation, meet the sharp blade of the divine trying to mold us to our true destiny, you know, do we just keep pushing against that, insisting that it has to be otherwise? Or just that in itself, is that the sign? Let me come back into my own center. Let me relax into the whole ocean. Let me ask myself, you know, who do I really want to be? Where am I going? Where does my happiness come from? And this, I was saying, is the difference between psychology and spirit. Not that psychology, as I said, isn't useful, but there's a certain point at which, well, the only way I can think of it is we just don't care anymore. You know, we just don't care about our personal reactions and the details of our karma and all the different reasons why and all the justifications. It's useful for self-understanding. It's essential if you are a stranger to yourself. So believe me, it's important. But there also comes a point where you simply lose interest. And all I want to do is, I don't care. An astrologer said recently about a purification that someone was going through. He said, don't even try to think about what it's about. He said, it's happening on so many deep levels, you'll never be able to access it with your conscious mind. Just when things begin to move away from you, just say, fine. Doesn't mean you don't hold a Kleenex in your hand and weep the whole time, but we exist on many levels, you know. There's the level where the little self is still in rebellion. And there's the level in which the soul is just saying, well, there's a story, I believe it was about Dhyanamata, if I'm not mistaken, but it was one of Master's direct disciples who had a number of operations and different parts of the body had to be cut and changed. And under the anesthesia was heard to say, just take it out, anything you want, just take it out. Which is just was a great attitude instead of, this is my body and what's happening to it. And it's like, who cares? This is my mind, my emotions, my heart, my life. Really, I am the vine. My father is the husbandman. Everything that does not bear fruit will be cut away and burned. And everything that does will flourish then and flourish more. If we open our hearts and minds and embrace it, God bless you.